Curtis Lewa.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
7 minutes after the hour of 5. As yours truly, Curtis Lewa, takes you home once again on the drive home at 5. As many of you reconnect with us, having been in your work stalls from 9 to 5, maybe you were listening to Imus in the morning. Now you're back into your ride. You got your terrestrial radio on, or maybe you're at your workplace with your computer terminal or your laptop listening to it on streaming audio. Or maybe with the app, the WABC app, or any number of other ways you can get it. And then eventually, if you decide, hey, sayonara, Sleeve, I got other things to do, you can catch it on podcast. But it is an important day because the president, who was busy playing golf yesterday, obviously it was not a good photo op. His staff had begged him, please, at Mar-a-Lago, while they continued to bury the bodies just miles away of the 17 who were killed by the nut job crews, don't go out on the links. He did anyway. People were wondering, okay, what is the president going to do in terms of the violence that took place at Parkland and the high school? And although I don't see the connection, apparently he ordered the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, to make sure that people cannot convert to a bump stock or purchase a bump stock, which was the mechanism used by Stephen Paddock, if you remember, back on October 1st in Las Vegas, in which he gunned down 58 dead at that country western concert, and over 900 were injured.
I signed a memorandum directing the Attorney General to propose regulations to ban all devices that turn legal weapons into machine guns.
Be interesting to see what the NRA has to say about that, as Wayne LaPierre remains in hibernation, as he does after all major shooting incidences. Then the president said, we're doing it for the children. We're doing it for the children.
We cannot imagine the depths of their anguish, but we can pledge the strength of our resolve. And we must do more to protect our children. We have to do more to protect our children.
Well, as you can see, the children are out and about, especially from Parkland, the high school, where they went up to Tallahassee. They had a die-in yesterday outside of the White House. These were different teenagers and young adults. And one who has become sort of a leader. I don't know if she's been elected or appointed, but she's definitely a spokesperson for this group, is the young lady who looks like sort of a modern-day Joan of Arc. Her haircut is such. Emma Gonzalez, who was railing about how they are going to fight to make sure that the NRA is disbanded.
Disband? Dismantle? Don't make another organization under a different name. Don't you dare come back here. The fact that you were in power for so long and that you had so much influence for so long in America just goes to show how much time and effort we still need to spend on fixing our country. And gun control is just the first thing right now, the first thing that we are mainly focusing on.
The first thing? That was a suggestion that there will be other issues. Anyway, on the line to discuss it, Joyce Kaufman. She's a radio hostess on 850 WFTL in Florida. Thanks for joining us again, Joyce.
Anytime, Curtis.
Okay, so you're a proud gun owner. You heard what the president ordered Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, to do today about the bump stock. I'm trying to figure out, what does that have to do with the killings that just took place at the Parkland High School?
I don't know, but if you figure it out, please call me and let me know what it has to do with it, because it doesn't really have anything to do with it.
Right. I would have thought that would have come in the aftermath of Stephen Paddock just going absolutely out of his mind, shooting down everyone at that country western concert, but nothing emerged from that, did it?
No. I don't remember anybody even talking about that much a week out of the event. And really, a bump stock, or what they're calling a bump stock, is generally a homemade device. You can't stop people from doing things like that as much as we might like to. And we can't stop people from owning guns as much as some people might like us to. So I'm really not sure how we get into this debate every single time and never address the fundamental issue of how do we keep our citizens safe in schools, in movie theaters, in hospitals, on Army bases.
Now, I'm trying to figure out, because we saw the Sneed family get interviewed day before on Good Morning America. This was the husband and wife, the family that took in Cruz, who was really without a place to live after the death of his stepmom. And they talked about, they knew he had guns. They made him get a lockbox. But do we think they knew that he had 10 rifles? Because it's now being reported as such. And do we know if they were legally purchased at this point, Joyce?
We do know that they were legally purchased, and they were purchased at a variety of gun shops. He filled out all the right paperwork, and I don't know what these adults who he lived with knew or didn't know, but he doesn't seem to me to present a normal picture. Anyone else would say that he's a highly disturbed individual. If someone like that comes to live under my roof and tells me they have guns, I say get rid of the guns or you can't live here. I don't understand how this fell through the cracks. But more importantly, Curtis, you have to look at this and ask yourself, where is the disconnect? 39 times the police were called out to this kid's house. You had two valid reports to the FBI tip lines. One, a person who knew him and was very specific about what the threat was just 30 days ago. We have a problem connecting the dots before these tragedies happen, and that's what we ought to be focused on.
Now, Joyce Kaufman, your outgoing governor, Rick Scott, there, he suggested that the brand new FBI director, Christopher Wray, just brand new, maybe a month in office, should resign because somebody at a call center somewhere down the line who was involved with the FBI flubbed this. I mean, why was he calling for the FBI director's resignation?
I think everybody is extremely emotional down here. You have to realize when it happens in your school or in your backyard, common sense kind of goes out the window and you react very emotionally. Rick Scott had to stand there and look at these grieving parents and grieving students, and then he hears that the FBI was told this was going to happen 30 days before. And in his, rage, look, the president also said there's something terribly amiss, that this communication fell apart. The FBI can't seem to find anybody. The Sarnoff brothers, they were reported to the FBI. They interviewed them and still didn't figure it out. Something is terribly wrong with our law enforcement. They've been spending a year looking for some collusion, and I don't know, so far nothing.
All right, now, I wanted to ask you about the many high schoolers from the high school in which the 17 were killed by Cruz. They seem to have been empowered, energized, becoming activists. Are they all united? Do you get a sense that there's a titular head here, or is this all just coming together very quickly as they went to Tallahassee today? They're going to be going to D.C. and trying to rally other students from around the country to their cause.
See, it doesn't feel very organic to me, and I'll tell you why. First and foremost, this is a part of Broward County where you have an enormous political divide, and this is a school where there are a tremendous amount of parents who are all for gun control. And I'm not sure that any of those kids has sufficient life experience other than the most tragic day of their lives to be, coming to any great conclusions or launching any movement. Plus, how are they getting the funding to do all this? Why are we having a CNN town hall meeting? Why did Tom Perez send out a fundraising letter on the back of these children who are protesting this horrible event? I just feel like, once again, people are capitalizing on grief and horror, and I'm uncomfortable with it. I don't know. I don't know who's the titular head. But then again, I didn't know that the Russians were paying for anti-Trump rallies and pro-Trump rallies.
And Joyce Kaufman, if, hypothetically, a vote were taken tomorrow, initiative and referendum in the state of Florida, would there be a move for more gun control, or the state that I know that seems to have an insatiable appetite for people to have guns, would they overwhelmingly vote not to impose any more gun control regulations?
Well, there was a proposal today at the Florida House, and they did not allow it to come to the floor. It has to go through committees. It had not been through the committees, but one of the representatives said, now's the time, let's act on this. And it was a pretty restrictive registration age gun bill, and it did not see the light of day. So I don't know what will happen. There's a lot of emotion, and these kids are certainly engendering my full love and support. But when we make decisions in moments of crisis like this, they're never good decisions.
Do appreciate that, Joyce Kaufman, as she is number four, joining us to give us the perspective from the state of Florida, where the kids are on the move. They were pounding the hound, the greyhound, from down there in Broward County, right on up there to Tallahassee, the state capital. Say they're going to be in Washington, D.C. by mid-March. They're urging other students to have a walkout at a certain time. I forget when on the calendar. And it just seems that there is a student movement afoot. Where it will lead, nobody knows yet.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Chiacchia down. As my grandfather Fidel Bianchino Varese used to say, you're a bunch of chiacchia downs, Pinocchios, liars. Remember Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I? Remember before the start of the summer, he predicted the following?
It will be a summer of hell for commuters.
Yeah, and it's continued to be that way for anyone who has to schlep into the bowels of New York City and take the subway. First off, did you see what happened to the millennials and hipsters? Well, it's mostly millennials and hipsters now out in Astoria. And all along the N and the W lines that lead towards Queensboro Plaza, and then eventually into the city of New York and Manhattan. No service. So at 7 a.m. in the morning, here are all these hipsters and millennials having to queue up and wait for buses that were late, that were broken down, run by the MTA, the money-taking agency, to try to get them to work. So they got a little bit of the taste of what it's like. But this is happening to everyone, young and old, millennial, hipster, people who were birthed here, people who will die here. The MTA sucks. It's that simple. The subway service continues to deteriorate, and all we do is get mumbo-jumbo from Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, who says, oh, I've done such a great job, you should elect me governor again. What do you think, we're all ubats? We're titched? And then who did he put in charge of the MTA? Do you remember? Joe, the savior, the Mashiach, Loda. Garbage. The guy's done jack diddly squat. Where was he today? Was he down there? Was he there on the N and W train there, right by the Triborough Bridge? Was he there? No, I'm not calling it the RFK Bridge. That's nonsense. The Triborough. Was he there to watch how the buses didn't arrive, how the hipsters and millennials were left out to drive? No. And all the Greeks from Astoria who were making the sign of the cross, you know, in the opposite direction to the Roman Catholics, because that's what they do. Joe Loder was supposed to be the Mashiach, the savior of the MTA, coming back a second time. Well, guess what? The last time he was chairman of the MTA, it was a full-time gig. Now, not only is he only there part-time on his time, but he's a vice president of operations at Langone Medical Center, NYU, where he gets a nice fat paycheck and where he spends most of his day. And hey, guess what? Downstairs, Jimmy Dolan. Jimmy Dolan, who used to have him as vice president of community relations, simply so he could be exempted from paying property tax, because Joe Loder's job at that point, having been deputy mayor in the Giuliani administration and then moving to the private sector, was to exempt James Dolan from paying property taxes. Can you imagine that? You run Madison Square Garden and you don't pay property taxes. Why? Because he's wine-dined and pocket-lined the crooked politicians like Joe Loder. Who do you think followed Joe Loder into that position? Well, it was Giuseppe Joe Pococo, who's on trial now for corruption. That's right. He used to work in that same office lobbying officials to maintain the selfish Jimmy Dolan from having to pay property taxes on some of the most expensive property in all of New York City. What does he run? St. Patrick's Cathedral? Is Madison Square Garden a religious organization, a nonprofit? Why the hell is he not paying property taxes? And then we find out that Joe Loder, who spends no time as chairman of the MTA, no time, is on the board of directors of Madison Square Garden. He just got appointed at, he makes $160,000 for attending meetings and nodding to Jimmy Dolan. Yes, Jimmy. Yes, anything you say, I'll kiss your tookus. That's right. That's just wine me, dine me, pocket line me, and I'll make sure the Democrats and Republicans never make you pay property taxes. I would hit him with arrears. In fact, I would do civil forfeiture on Jimmy Dolan. The next time they have a Billy Joel concert, I would seize the assets for all the money that he owes. And hey, Billy Joel, then you could sue your friend Jimmy Dolan and his friend Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo. And then what happened to the Canadian? Remember, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo went on this search for a genius who could run the subway system of New York. He was looking for a president of the MTA money-taking agency, and he chose Andy Byford. Is that Andy Byford? What the hell is that? Oh, well, he's run, you know, the London underground system, the Toronto underground system. He was brought in New York, one day fanfare. Have you seen him since? Have you seen this Canuck? I saw him at a Toronto Maple Leafs game, you know, when they were in town to play the Rangers in Madison Square Garden. He's been missing in action since. So here are all these hipsters and millennials who couldn't catch their train today, angry, upset, ready to go back to Iowa where there are more pigs than people, and Idaho where there are more potatoes than people. And did you see Joe Loder, the MTA director? No. Did you see this Canuck? This Canadian who was brought in to be president of the MTA, who was supposed to be like a Mashiach number two to Joe Loder, President Andy Byford? No. And you didn't see Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, and you certainly didn't see Comrade de Blasio, because they don't give a flying flip about you. Just pay your subway fare and shut up.
America!
Sliwa.
From the street perspective, Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Please welcome Rita Cosby.
Curtis and Cosby. The new midday show. Streaming now. WABCradio.com.
We're on the cusp of having that possibly in New Jersey, as the new Governor Murphy has said he wants recreational use of marijuana passed by the legislative process, the Assembly and State Senate. And even here in New York, it's a gubernatorial election. It's become a hot issue amongst all the candidates. But on the line to discuss it is Rick Fuentes. He's the former head of the New Jersey State Police. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Rick.
Hi, Curtis. How are you?
Well, doing fairly well, because I can see that this issue is percolating on both sides of the Hudson. But I understand that you'll actually be appearing before the Assembly on March 5th and speaking on this issue in what, the affirmative or the negative, Rick?
No, I'll be speaking on the opposing side of this issue. And the thing is, we're 4 years down the road now from legalization in Colorado and Washington, and we've had a real opportunity here to now take a look at some of the impacts and the consequences in those states. So we're not dealing with the emotion and the anecdotes that used to drive the narrative on the pro side. And it's very important, and I'm glad you're certainly giving me a voice tonight to talk about this. But it's very important to get this other side of the issue out.
Okay, and the other side, would that be to continue arresting or ticketing people who are in possession or who are using marijuana for recreational use?
Well, this is a funny thing here, because if you ask any judge, they'll tell you nobody goes to jail for simple possession unless simple possession is in conjunction with the occurrence of another crime, or it's a violation of a parole condition. Nobody's going to go to jail for simple possession. So I think that gets blown out of proportion sometimes.
Okay, so in terms of the way you envision it as being, for instance, I was on Auburn Street the other day in Patterson, 4th Ward, high crime area, but people openly dealing and smoking marijuana. The cops are overwhelmed. They'll tell you, I'd just rather not deal with pot. I've got more serious issues, fentanyl, heroin, opioids to deal with. What would you say to them as police officers?
Well, right now it's an illegal substance. It's illegal federally, and it's still illegal in the state of New Jersey. If there's going to be any solutions to that, it has to be done politically. But just jumping to legalization, I think, is putting a tourniquet on this issue right here, and it needs to be discussed a lot further and debated a lot further.
Would you suggest, Rick Fuentes, decriminalization, which is what the mayor in New York City has essentially done, Although, ironically, here in New York City, there are more arrests now for pot possession and pot use than there were before. But he wanted decriminalization. Is that what you suggest that should be the interim phase?
No, I still see this as a pathway to legalization, Curtis. And it's still going to open up a lot of sympathy for use. I really approach this from not so much an adult perspective as much as the impact it will have on our adolescents. They look at all of these messages. They're very affected by these messages. And it's resulting in Colorado and in Washington and in places like California, anywhere else where it's legalized, we're seeing these spikes in adolescent use as a result of the sympathies that they see towards it.
Now, for many years, Rick Fuentes, as a member of law enforcement, you probably were involved in, if not in, directly involved in, overseeing and implementing the DARE program, which in most school districts, not just in New Jersey, but around the country, were overseen and operated by the local police departments. Do you feel that was an effective program?
Yes, I feel that those types of drug education programs do work. We see it now working in action with tobacco. And all of the commercials that you see and all the advocacy against smoking. It's the same thing. You know, if you take Colorado, for instance, prior to legalization, they were right in the middle of the pack for juvenile use of marijuana nationally. Now they head the pack by about 5%. So legalization has had an impact on the adolescents in Colorado to increase their use, and that's not good because we know now from medical studies that this produces cognitive issues, poor performance in school, suspensions, expulsions, other disciplinary problems, and it affects the brains of children if it's habitual use into adulthood.
Now, Rick, in reference to Colorado, because it is a place we can all look at, you're right, there's been an increase in the use of marijuana by young adults, but also their studies seem to indicate that because legal marijuana is so readily available for recreational use, they seem to have less problems with opioids. Should that not be considered also in the discussion?
I'm not sure that I trust that statistic. We have fentanyl, which is now spreading across the country, which is an adulterant to heroin or is used by itself, and that's increasing the deaths in almost every state. So I'd be very suspect of any data at the state level that indicates that their opioid deaths are dropping. I'm not seeing that trend.
And then finally, Rick Fuentes, as the former head of the New Jersey State Police, there are a lot of young men, young women, maybe when they were 17, 18, or in a fraternity or sorority at college, who got busted, you know, with a nickel or dime bag or while publicly smoking marijuana, you know, and the cops pinched them because that was their job. But it's many years afterwards, and it's haunting them because it's on their record. Should there be a way to sort of etch-a-sketch those kind of busts away so it doesn't become this impediment for them as they seek other opportunities in their life?
So, again, that's a political solution, Curtis. And I think you're referring to the expungement for simple or minor possessory offenses of marijuana. I know that's something that's being discussed right now, and I think that's something that Senator Ron Rice is having a hearing on in Jersey City tomorrow, where that is actually one of the things that he's going to be talking about.
We do appreciate that. Boy, things are moving fast and furiously. El Rapido in New Jersey, where the brand new Governor Murphy wants legalized recreational use of marijuana. He wants it not through initiative and referendum, which is what I would suggest both in New Jersey and New York, but rather he wants it to be passed in the legislative process, the Assembly and the State Senate. And the former head of the New Jersey State Police, Rick Fuentes, along with others, will be testifying on March 5th in the Assembly. And, wow, you know, the guy in Trenton there who's always making headlines is the weed man. I wonder if they're going to have the weed man there testifying also with a purple haze over him as he's giving...
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
We're coming to Patterson, the Guardian Angels, the fourth ward, which resembles what New Jack City was like in the midst of the crack cocaine epidemic of the 80s here in New York and Newark and other cities. Still exists, though, in that part of Patterson. And you would think that the police director, Jerry Speziale, He's like Mr. Hollywood, you know. You would figure he'd want to meet with us because we're all over the world. But he said questions should be posed to Passaic County Prosecutor Camelia Valdez, the chief law enforcement officer in the county. Hey, Spezial, you're not afraid to meet with me, are you? And by the way, shouldn't the county prosecutor be locking up the corrupt politicians in Patterson, huh?